All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We're sponsored by Robin Lewison and Healthmark Enterprises. We're also co-produced by Robin and co-hosted today. She's doing it all. You're wearing a lot of hats today, Robin. How are you?
I'm well. Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
What's happening?
Well, I mean, lots going on around the Delaware Valley. It's a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
It's almost 70 degrees.
You know, it's interesting. Normally, I guess because we turned the clocks back, and I don't know what relevance this is, but I get up early in the morning now, and so I actually feel like it's afternoon. There have been days when
it starts to get dark at 4:30.
It's incredible. So, I mean, but we got a lot going on, and I know we have a fantastic guest.
And we have a good friend and an amazing attorney in the house, Paula Robinson.
How are you, Paula?
Hi, good morning or good afternoon.
Good afternoon. By the way, like I said, normally we're all like good morning and wiping our eyes, but for some reason I got up. I've been getting up early these days. And first of all, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure. Having said that, if you would, just remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and about the practice.
Okay. My name is Paula Robinson, and I practice workers' compensation in Pennsylvania, and I've had my own practice for a little over 10 years. I've been practicing a total of 34 years, and I've always done workers' comp, and prior to being out on my own, I did also work for two of the larger firms in Philadelphia doing defense work, so I've had a lot of experience on both sides.
And it's interesting because a lot of the outstanding attorneys have worked on both sides and the defense side. And so I got that,
It's good to have that.
Yes.
That background.
It is.
So you know what the other side is thinking.
Exactly.
Especially when your client's panicking, going, what's going on? You can sit there and go, here's what it is. Let me translate. And here's what's going on. Having said that, I was reading your little bit of background information on you, and I was impressed. You were a certified workers' compensation attorney, and talk about what that is.
Okay, probably about 7 or 8 years ago, the state of Pennsylvania offered the certification for the first time to workers' compensation attorneys, and there were probably about couple hundred of us that sat for the test. So I'm not sure quite how many passed it, but
they say everyone passed.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I got those numbers.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
One person, Paula Robinson, was the only one that passed.
Yeah.
How do you like that?
Surely
like,
you jest.
Just kidding out there.
There's going to be a few
I'm going to be getting some calls tonight.
That's right.
Just having some fun, but yeah.
So the certification allows you to advertise that you are certified as a specialist in workers' compensation, and that just gives you an edge because it gives your clients confidence that you know what you're doing.
And you can advertise it, and it's a little blurb at the end.
And
it really was a tough test.
It was.
Especially after someone hasn't been in law school for 18 years. I mean, that's what I heard from all the attorneys.
Yeah. After I took and passed the bar, I thought that was the last test.
So it was
very, the questions were very vague. And if you really didn't know what you were doing, you wouldn't have known what the answers were.
Wow.
And there were essays as well. Oh. So.
Essays.
Glad it's over.
I know.
I was a science major. Mm-hmm. But I took two of the most important classes, aside from all my science classes, public speaking, invaluable, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I must have taken about 3 or 4 writing classes. Something told me.
Yeah.
So I can write a mean email.
Don't put the emphasis on mean. I'm telling you, I've been the subject of having said that.
Although most of my attorneys just want, yes. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. I'm
I have one in particular. Yes. No.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
I'm sure I know that person.
I'm sure you
I'll
do.
I'll talk off the air. having said that, though, what's cool about that is the fact that it's like when you're a doctor, you don't go to an orthopod for an issue with your sinuses.
Correct.
So in other words, that really does distinguish the experts in workers' compensation from individuals that are general practice attorneys that may be good at
dabblers.
Exactly.
But we
a jack
had
of all
that.
Trades, but they don't
10
specialize.
10 or 15 years ago, the courts were filled with PI dabblers.
Oh yeah,
they really remember.
Uh huh.
They were, and it used to annoy the workers' compensation attorneys, not to mention the medical coordinators, because the dabblers, they would at the last minute, or everything had to be done like uber fast. I'm glad those dabblers are gone.
It gives people the confidence to know that you're an expert in the area.
Yes. Well, another important consideration when you're talking about the dabblers and those who are experts in workers' comp.
That's a new verb.
I like that.
We have the dabblers.
It's very important to understand your workers' comp judges, because
yes.
I practice the whole eastern side of the state, and all the judges are different. They have different rules, and even though some of their procedural rules are posted on something called WICIS, it's the Workers' Comp Automated Integrated System, a lot of the personal rules you don't know unless you regularly practice before them. And
right.
Trust me, every judge is different.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And one of the things I was impressed when you talk about your, when you decided to go out on your own is to really have a client first sort of demeanor, making sure you answered the phone, making sure that you gave them the personal care because they're going through such difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Well, I made it my mission when I went out on my own to always return phone calls the same day. If I'm busy, I'll call them back as soon as I can. And I do everything myself, so they can rest assured that they get me. They don't get an intake person. They don't get a paralegal or some other younger attorney to handle the case. And I take a lot of pride in my work, and I think that shows because in 2015, I won an award in Philadelphia from Smart CEOs.
I saw that.
And it was the service award that
nice.
I won.
That's awesome. I'll tell you what. So
what award do you think I could win, Joe?
It's a no-nonsense award. And
I could win that.
Okay, the best producer, the best. See, I got
no,
listen,
don't.
I know who's. Listen, Robin is the executive producer, so without her, it's just me and you here, and there's no airtime. We're in huge trouble, but still, you'd still be a great show. having said that, you also mentioned something I thought very interesting, that sometimes if somebody's injured and they can't get to you because they're still you will go to them and accommodate them because in many cases they're not mobile. Talk about
That's correct. Over the years, I have no ego. I don't care if I have to go to a diner or a restaurant, or I try not to go to people's homes. Just
preferably a diner.
As a safety issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there have been rare occasions where people are wheelchair bound.
Yeah.
I'm signing up a client. I just sent out the paperwork this morning, and she reached out to me, and she had an injury last year in 2020 where she was run over by a paving machine. Both legs were run over. So she is wheelchair bound. And so I offered, we did the interview over the phone, which I've been doing during COVID.
Sure.
And I sent the paperwork out to her. I emailed it, and she somehow couldn't open things, so I overnighted the package with the documents, and then I put an envelope in there for her to overnight it back to me. And then we can just communicate on the phone, emails, fax, and then because of COVID, we've been having all our hearings virtually,
right. Yeah.
The workers' comp system. So it's
how do you like that?
There's aspects of it I really do
like,
and we've been blessed to keep working during COVID, yes.
Yeah.
And I remember when WICUS came out probably about 12 or 13 years ago, a lot of the attorneys didn't care for it and didn't want to learn it, but it's been invaluable, and
yeah.
It's let our practice through COVID when other court systems
yeah.
were totally shut down.
Yeah, the PI attorneys, nothing.
Yeah.
Well, they're dealing with jury trials.
No trials.
And you're dealing with a judge, right? Administrator.
But the judges went virtual right away.
Yeah. We didn't miss a beat.
It
was unbelievable.
But, it really was.
One,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that people don't know, when first of all, you can be the most loyal employee ever.
Yeah.
Been working for somebody for 10, 15, 20 years. Doesn't matter. And once you get injured on the job, that system is not always as accommodating as you are as an employee. And having said that, not only are you dealing with those things, but they're always denying and disputing your claims and stuff like that. Talk about the importance of setting expectations at the beginning and educating your client to really go make it through that process, because it's in many circumstances, especially if it's not a catastrophic injury, but it might be a catastrophic injury in regards to it may be a disc injury or something like
mm-hmm.
that. But you didn't lose a limb, or you didn't get run over by the machine, but you're in bad shape.
Right.
If it's not so obvious, they may deny or dispute. Talk about how important it is to kind of set expectations for your clients at the beginning, so they know what to expect and don't panic and live, like a yo-yo.
Well, it's very important to be honest and upfront with the client, especially if they were injured at work and the claim has been denied. Because if it's denied, then the only option that they have is to file a claim petition through the use of an attorney, because you need medical evidence, and they will also, the client will need to testify. But if they file the claim petition and it's not readily resolved, I always tell them it's not pleasant news, but it's going to take 9 months to a year if the case doesn't settle to get a judge's decision. And do they want or can they survive that long? A few years back, I had an unfortunate situation where I had a young man with a family. And he had a very bad disc injury. It was extruded at a few places.
Okay.
And he had to undergo surgery. They denied it. We kept litigating it. And things got so bad that he had to move back to Puerto Rico and live with his wife's family.
Wow.
So we still communicated, and I was able to have him testify by phone. I explained the situation to the judge. I eventually won that case. They appealed it, and I won on appeal. But it was a big insurance company, and it took a long time for them to issue payment when they were supposed to. And then when they issued payment, they didn't issue the proper interest that they owed. So it was just a constant battle, but
I don't wonder how they live with themselves. It's just absolutely incredible.
Just fine.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah,
but
just
I'm just
fine.
Saying it's a real, it's just uncalled for. Why is it that way? Why
money? It's business.
It's all money.
It's all about money.
And during COVID, they took the opportunity because they said that they were short-staffed, even though everybody's working from home.
Uh-huh.
They took the opportunity, A, not to pay the doctors, not to pay the claimants, issue more UROs than I've seen in my entire career. I mean, it's really been ridiculous.
Yes.
And defense attorneys picking on things or that they've never picked on before, or just picked on it worse.
Well, I think on the defense side, what you have to understand there is those attorneys are under immense pressure to bill.
And
their performance is judged on the hours that they bill a month. Right. And they have not been able to travel to hearings. And when I did defense work, we got reimbursed for travel, not only expense-wise, but you were able to bill for it. So I might have a hearing up in Williamsport where my butt's in the car for 6 hours driving back and forth. Well, since COVID, they've lost that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot.
So they're scrambling in some cases to make up the billing.
Right. But I always say there, without plaintiff attorneys, there are no defense attorneys.
So, you're right.
I know. So figure it out, boys and girls. Seriously, I get the fact that they had their travel time taken away, but they are messing with people's lives.
Yes.
On a constant basis.
That's the big thing.
Yes.
They're messing. I mean, they're taking away. They're returning people to work in ridiculous situations. Yesterday, I had a woman that she was issued a return to work letter. She complied, and it was for very sedentary duty. She had a Fitbit. She walked 6,000 steps in one day yesterday.
That was sedentary?
That was sedentary. And it's so interesting. She just texted me the screenshot of it. And it's so interesting. 6,000 steps. Now, obviously, not the majority of our clients are not wearing Fitbits.
Right.
But she knew.
Thank God she did.
She did that. Sedentary. She was able to be in contact with her doctor, and she told the doctor, and the ortho wasn't real pleased with that.
One of the things that people, and they shoot themselves in the foot and they don't even know it, is talk about what happens upon somebody actually getting injured. So in other words, somebody gets injured on a Friday, pull it out their shoulder or their neck or something like that, or their back, and they've never been in that position before. So they decide they're going to, give the employer the benefit of the doubt. They're going to wait the weekend because they don't want to make waves. They figure they're doing them a favor, and they're going to suck it up. Monday comes, next thing you know, they don't have any improvement in their situation, and then they report this to the employer. They don't get rewarded for that, do they? They don't get like a trophy. They don't sit there and go, well, Bob or Mary, they gave us all they had, and they even waited the weekend, but it just didn't work out. It may also come back to bite them in the butt.
Well, the important thing to remember about that, and most people don't know it, is they have 120 days to give notice.
Right.
But I've had cases where employers say, oh, you didn't tell me that day, and so...
Right,
we're going to tell our insurance company to deny it, but they have 120 days to give notice, and they can text it, they can call people, and then when we have the hearings, they can testify as to how they gave notice, which on a claim petition is an essential element.
Yeah, having said that, let's go through the process when somebody gets injured on a job of what their protocol should be.
Okay. Well, when someone gets injured, they should go to a manager or foreman or somebody of a supervisory capacity and give notice and tell them how they injured themselves. Now, most of the time when they get to me, it's after the fact. But giving notice, like I said, that's one of the main requirements. A claim petition, but they should ask their employer, do you have doctors I can go to? Do you have panel doctors? And they really should have been given a list when they were hired, and they should be given a list when they give notice of the injury, and they can go to any provider on that list. Now, if the employer does that correctly, then they're obligated to pay their medical bills for the first 90 days. But there's a lot of employers that don't have these panel lists, so the claimants can go wherever they want.
How often does somebody not even know if they signed one? Because I've talked to injured workers that they get handed, you know, especially, so I'm a union guy, so next thing you know, you get handed a you know, number of papers when you sign up, okay, and yeah, it's a high-rise building.
Happens every day.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a high-rise.
I think with the amount of people I coordinate, maybe one out of 30 meets the criteria and is captivated to that 90-day list.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't even worry about it anymore. I remember when it first came out, Paula, I mean, the entire industry was in an uproar. 90 days, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But now, I mean, do you really worry about it?
No, the employers don't comply. They, for the most part, they really don't.
I don't think so.
No.
And we have doctors that will work with us. I mean, I've gotten people's second opinions.
Yes.
But having said that, when the workers typically don't know anyway, so they you know, they get injured.
That's why they need lawyers like Paula.
Yeah.
So that they can they need lawyers that have the energy and the wisdom, and I say energy because, you know, you're talking a lot now, especially when they're not coming into your office. But you have to, I mean, they need to be explained. I mean, this morning we got a phone call. The woman called three times because she's still confused. Still confused.
And probably scared, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing. That's the other thing. If this is their first rodeo.
Oh, yeah.
Or they've never had anybody in their family, or they, you know, that is a frequent flyer.
Yes.
Well, but you know, you look at the process that you know, it's the first 90. Why is it so important in regards to the medical? You know, I know the answer, but I'd like to let the people know why it's so important in some senses to understand. What the protocols of what employers are required to have a worker do with the panel acknowledgement letter, with the signing of with the posting of the actual the medical panel, because panel doctors are often you know, they dispute deny without giving diagnostics and all those things, and so. It's important to know that information so you can go to a doctor that, you know, somebody, you know, like Robin, who manages that whole entire process, who has got great doctors at her fingertips. But it's so important because it could be the difference between getting a fair shot and not getting a fair shot, because people are so used to their family doctors. When they grow up, it's a part of their family. That's not what a panel doctor is.
Just yesterday, I sent Paula to one of my new facilities in Allentown. And she met a new doctor, and you know what, she was my eyes and ears because I haven't seen this office yet, although I've seen they have like 16 others. But I the first thing I said to Paula today, I said, how was that office?
But
she liked it. It was good. It was
it's
good.
Important though, right? It can be the difference between getting denied and disputed to regarding it related to an injury that you definitely have.
Well, yeah, and the problem with a lot of the panel doctors is they're paid by the insurance company. So they want to make sure that they give the insurance company every out. And I've had many people come to me with bad disc injuries, and they should get an MRI right out of the gate, and they don't order one.
And they don't.
And then the longer they wait, the worse their back is, and it just snowballs.
Well, especially up in your area, in the Allentown, Bethlehem, the whole area, I mean, you don't have as many doctors as we do here in Philly.
Correct.
So that puts you at a disadvantage. So anytime I find out about a new doctor up there, I definitely call you. But those doctors are just like the ours down here. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they're not writing for the MRI. And we have these things called Concentra and WorkNet. And that's just like a cattle chute.
Yes.
You know, they just put them through. They put them through and put them through and put them through. And then I finally get them 90 days later or whenever I get them. Like, do you have an MRI? Nope. X-rays? Anything?
Nothing.
Raise your hand.
And they send them back to work.
Yeah, they sent him back to work. You know, I have a cop who has been going to Concentra. They tried to send her back to physical therapy for the third time. She has an unstable cervical spine.
Ugh.
I know. It's a horror story. And I'm like, you need a new MRI. So we find, I mean, I don't even need to get into it because I think this might be the third week I've talked about this woman. But finally, they've agreed to let her get the surgery. Unstable spine.
I mean,
because I said to her, you can't hold a gun.
No.
And they have her working.
Ugh.
I mean, to me personally.
That's another lawsuit waiting to happen right there.
Talk about that.
And I'm not talking workers' comp either.
No, it's not. But it exactly. And that, see, these are the kinds of phone calls I get all the time. And some of the times I am just blown away. Like sometimes you think nothing could, you know.
Top that.
And then I see her MRI and I'm like, and the report from the neurosurgeon. And I'm like, your health insurance is still intact, right? Because I'm like, just get the surgery.
Yeah.
We'll worry about it later.
Yeah.
And most of the attorneys, like you, Paula, you're up for that.
Oh, absolutely.
And her health insurance denied it.
I just think, why? They said it was a work injury?
Because they're self-insured.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're, anyway, they denied it because they knew it was a work injury.
That's what
but if it's not accepted.
Exactly.
And it's $100,000 surgery because it's a cervical fusion laminectomy. It's a big surgery.
Well, that's a great point, though. For, you know, so one.
Sometimes I can get them done. I'm like, you know, especially with the bicep tendon tear or, you know, something that needs to be done right away. Like my orthos are really good. They're like, we just have to get it done.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of my orthos hooked up with surgery centers, but because they tell me you have to get that surgery with the tendons done ASAP.
Because they'll retract?
They'll retract and they'll never be right again. And I had a woman with an ACL. She was 26 years old. I had one of my surgery centers buy the graft, the ACL graft. Mm-hmm. We had to do right away, and I explained to the attorney, I'm like, if we don't do this, she's 26. She'll never walk properly because it was just a fluke that she tore that tendon, that ACL, because that's usually a sports injury.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know that the defense counsel, they wouldn't pay for it? Oh, yeah.
What's
up
interesting?
Until the end, they said, we're not paying for it. And I said to the attorney, oh, they said it wasn't work-related because it was an ACL. They said it couldn't possibly be work-related.
I'm sorry, nobody ever had an ACL tear?
Well, it's known as a sports injury. The meniscal tear is more of a work injury, but she's 26. She was lifting. I mean, so the graft cost, I think between $13,000 and $16,000. That's mm-hmm. just the graft.
Right.
So they weren't going to pay for medical, and I had to work with the attorney. Thank God the attorney was able to get the graft paid.
You're talking about the work comp company wasn't going to pay?
No, they weren't going to pay. They settled the case, but they didn't want to pay any medical.
Ugh.
I find it amazing. Paul, you said something earlier when Robin, you were talking about somebody's personal medical insurance. If something gets denied by a work comp insurance company, and why wouldn't, in other words, okay, they've just said it's not a work injury, so, and then the other, it's amazing, they're both playing each other. Right?
Well, here's the way it should work. If workers' comp denies it, they should issue the denial, and then the personal insurance should pay for it. I mean, that's bordering on bad faith if they don't. And then these big insurance companies have subrogation departments. So what happens is the personal insurance will send the attorney the subrogation information.
So they can pay it back.
Exactly. Yeah. I just had one that we won another decision, and the gentleman had cervical fusion surgery, and his personal insurance paid for it. And then they sent me a subrogation letter, and I sent that on to defense counsel, and they had to pay it because they were ordered to pay for that fusion and all the bills related.
But I can tell you, this is why we started, like right before COVID, I started using surgery centers and aligning myself with surgery centers because the hospitals were horrific to deal with. So even if, let's just say that that whole scenario happened, mm-hmm. and the workers' comp gets denied, but they have backup insurance, it was a 50-50 shot that one of those hospitals was going to allow the health insurance to take it. And then the copay.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of people that are not on comp, and then they get hit with a horrendous copay because they might not have great health insurance. So that was another factor. So that's when I started asking surgery centers, if I knew what the case was about, mm-hmm. would they do claim petitions and would they do surgeries and wait to get paid?
And you've had good experience with
that? I've had great experiences with 3 surgery centers.
You'll have to give me the names.
I will. I'm hoping that one gets built up in your area. But it takes over $1 million to build these surgery centers because they have to get outfitted for usually orthopedic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to get certified. I mean, it's a process.
I find it amazing, though, where – you know, you're fighting Paul, you're fighting for your clients, and they're going, and it's a legal process. And so, we've heard the same thing in a million different times. Insurance companies are in the business of making money, not paying it out, right? Taking in the payments, not paying them out. And so, having said that, when now you're talking about individuals, it's not just a legal game, it's their health on the line.
Correct.
Have you ever been in a situation where somebody, like Robin mentioned, where they're holding up a surgery and somebody's in pain?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It happens all the time, unfortunately.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And another thing to remember is when someone has a work injury, it doesn't just affect that person. A lot of times they're married, they have children. It affects their whole family.
And if we can get them surgery faster, it will prevent drug abuse.
Yes.
It'll prevent addiction. And, you know, I've been told by the, you know, attorneys that practice in your area or even the Philadelphia ones, well, the judge isn't going to understand if I send a client that lives in Allentown down to Philly. And I'm like, tell them that this doctor is associated with this surgery center and we're going to get the surgery done regardless of the status of the claim. And it's almost like the judges won't understand that.
I don't buy that argument.
That's what they've told me.
Well, the interesting thing when COVID hit and we've been doing everything virtually, I did want to add this in. When you're saying my area, I am up in the Lehigh Valley, but I have offices in Williamsport,
right.
Mansfield, and Doylestown. I also come down to Philadelphia. And so this virtual practice that we have now, and I believe it's here to stay. The judges seem to want to go back to in-person, at least no time soon. So that having been said, I can represent anybody
anywhere in
the entire Commonwealth. And right now I have a client from Iowa and I have a client from Utah.
Did they get injured in PA?
The one got injured in PA and I had his case. He lives in Iowa. The employer's out of Texas. He got injured in Gettysburg. So I contacted the adjuster and I said, this is not a Texas claim. The injury happened in Pennsylvania.
Did they fight you when you tell them it?
No. No, the adjuster was really good. But I was referred that case by another workers' comp attorney in Iowa.
Okay.
Interesting.
Who, by the way, found me on AVO. And we can discuss that in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
But now maybe that argument has lessened. You're right.
Yes.
With the onset of COVID. But I found a number of orthopedists in New Jersey. And when I started to use them, I got pushback from certain attorneys. Well, what's the judge going to say? Because we have doctors here in Philly. And I'm like, well, dude, if I can get the surgery done,
right,
then and get the injury taken care of, it's less money for everybody else and that they have to put out and addiction and this and that. And I was really passionate about it and still am.
Well, I don't think the judges really care what doctor what doctors they go to. I had another situation where my client had had surgery by a doctor in Manhattan, and he wanted to go back to him for this second surgery that was work-related. He was in a motor vehicle accident. He was in two motor vehicle accidents. So he wanted to go back to this surgeon who had all his records, who he really trusted, and we won that case. It was the judge never even questioned. It was a non-issue.
Talk about, and we're, you know what, let's go to break. But when we come back, I want to know what led you to go out on your own and you know, take the leap and to open up your own practice. You know what, it's you know, it's a very special thing. And being able to, you know, really determine and help people through your own process, on your own terms, with your own care, with your own bedside manner, and making sure and setting, you know, the standards is so important for the client. And a lot of people, so many people are obviously they've never been injured, they get hurt, now all of a sudden, you know what, you know, they have to find somebody, and they better be right. We are going to have more from the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professionals, providers, and specialists, to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We're sponsored by our great friend, Robin Lewison, who also is our co-host on the broadcast. Ecstatic to have Paula Robinson, workers' compensation attorney.
Thank you.
Pennsylvania. Having said that, Paul, what made you, you made that leap into owning your own firm and going out there on your own. Did you come right from the defense side to that, or did you, was there a stop in between that? And what really made you go out and do that? It's a bold step for anyone.
Well, thank you. No, I was on the defense side, but I had a taste of private practice when I was younger, and I practiced in Pittsburgh, and I actually worked with my spouse at that time, and so I had a taste of it, and I just never lost that, and I really wanted to do things my way.
Sure.
And I just didn't have any doubts. I just took the leap of faith.
And typically, you know, I mean, as somebody who's successful in owning her own firm, you know, it's a male dominated, you know, industry and field. What was it like coming up and kind of breaking through the boys club and establishing yourself as one of the premier work comp attorneys in the region?
Well, when I moved to Philadelphia years ago, I did practice in defense firms, and I was known by...
Oh, you were known.
Yeah, I was known by a lot of attorneys. And it wasn't hard for me to start obtaining clients, and I just had to figure out how to do it and, you know, when to do it, and it just kind of fell into place. And I have... I'm very blessed to have good marketing people.
Right, and having said that, did you have role models when you, in other words, when you made that leap, and did you have anybody, you know, helping to guide you? Because being a successful and good attorney is one thing, but also having that business savvy and the wherewithal to say, you know what, not only can I do this, somebody's, you know, out there who would be mentoring you, a go-to person, or did you just get out there and say, you know, it's me against the world, let's rock it out?
Well, I was fortunate. Most of the attorneys in the workers' comp bar are very nice, and we tend to help each other out. And so I was able to get, you know, samples and things that I needed to get started. And then I did have I hired a lawyer to help me incorporate, and he didn't do workers' comp. He did business law. But as I said, I'm very blessed to have Kane Partners is who I use to market, and as in particular, Christine Kane. And she has helped me really build my business.
And you've been you're out there 10 years?
Yes.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
It is, and you know, so many people get beat up when they get into the system. One of the, like Robin said earlier, the first thing you need is a lawyer. You educate people. You have, you know, you blog. You do different things. Talk about, you know, your passion for educating the public, because so often when they get hit at first, literally can turn their life upside down and destroy everything. Because they get caught up in a situation where they're just chasing their tail constantly, and in the meantime, their health and their physicality is going down the tubes.
Right.
Not to mention their finances. Talk about your efforts to educate people.
Well, I do routinely write blogs, and I use social media a lot, and Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I use all those avenues to. Put educational bits out to the public because they deserve to know what really goes on. And I ask a lot of questions in my blogs, like, what is an IME? People write that. That's one of the questions that they put in Google. They want to know. I mean, they go to Google because they want to be educated. So that's really helped bring people to my practice.
And the same exact I was thinking the same thing. In other words, the best time, a lot of people will say, "Well, I'm not litigious. I don't want to." You're not being litigious. You're educated. As soon as something happens,
they have a right to get a lawyer.
Not to mention that to be educated at the first, you know, upon being injured, they probably don't even know that notice is required. You know, or that there's a how often do people come in your office and they didn't, they're not aware of even or didn't even know any of the panel requirements. So in other words, are they not sure if they signed anything?
Right.
They just don't know. You know, by the time they come to you,
yeah.
When do you typically get somebody? When after they get injured, right away or after they've been beat up a little bit?
I'd say it's a mixed bag. Some clients wait until they get some letter from a lawyer or the insurance company telling them that they need to, let's say, go to an IME, an independent medical evaluation, and they don't know what that is, and then they think, well, maybe I should get a lawyer. And then if they're asked to go to an IME, that's the start of the insurance company wanting to stop their benefits. That's where it all starts.
Robin, that's an independent medical exam. A lot of people don't call them independent medical.
Defense medical. The defense medical, I get their purpose and everything, but I just tell clients to go with the flow. Be nice.
Yeah.
Stay calm.
I've heard it.
Be on time.
Yes.
How's there any
go?
How's there ever any credibility with it though? Like for example, sometimes they say it's 5 minutes.
You know
minutes
what?
Off.
It's like the IRS. It is what it is.
Yeah, we sure do like the IRS. We're just kidding, but I'm just.
It is what it is. It's in the law.
It's right. A strategy.
I know you can have multiple IMEs, and that's just how it is.
They have the right to send you once every 6 months.
They do. So, but the big thing is, I'm like, be nice. And go, you know, I can't tell you. Some of these people, they're like scared. They don't go. I'm like, no, you have to go.
Well, if they don't go, then the defense lawyer will file a petition to compel, and the judges will compel them to go. And then it doesn't look good for the claimant that they didn't go. And Robin made a very good point. It's important to be on time because I've had clients who have – I have a gentleman – he lives up in the hinterlands in Lehigh Valley, and he has to come down here tomorrow for an IME in Bala Cynwyd.
Probably right around the corner.
And in this building. So I told him, make sure that you leave yourself at least an hour.
If not more.
Yeah, because of the Schuylkill, because of traffic.
Yeah.
Because I've had some clients go to the building, they're lost, they go to a different door, and they get in and they're 10 minutes late, and the doctor says, too bad, you're late.
So
I'm not seeing you.
I know.
But I drove an hour and a half to get here. Well,
I tell them
I don't even know how they call themselves doctors, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, they're doing a job, they're whatever. But I tell clients all the time, I'm like, I don't care what it takes.
Yeah.
And it's more of a legal issue than it is a medical issue. And most of the time, I want them to speak to the attorney about it. But if the attorney tells them to call me, I'm like, you got to go.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Who's Who in Food Labor Show, sponsored by Robin Lewison, Healthmark Enterprises. Robin's guest is Paul Robinson, founder of the Robinson Law Firm here in Pennsylvania. Terms like, light duty or for example,
sedentary duty.
Well, but you get sent to light duty or a previous injury. What do they call that when somebody had they were injured prior in high school? They might have pre-existing injury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that insurance companies also use on a constant basis to, you know, mess. I think you mess with clients. So let's talk about light duty first. They send somebody back to light duty. I've heard all kinds of nightmares. Especially if you're a construction worker and light duty, there's not a lot of light duty. Are you required to at least try light duty?
Yes. What I always tell my clients is if you get a letter from the employer or a phone call, however you get it, and you're told to report back to work and they'll accommodate your restrictions, you have to go back and try it. I tell them, because workers' comp judges don't like it if you say, well, I know it's just a setup and I'm not going to go back. In fact, I had one woman who I represented, and they asked her to go back to work 5 times. And she begged me to take her case. And I told her, you know, this is a tough one because you never return to work. Well, we ended up settling that case. I did take it, and she had legitimate reasons. But I tell people, you have to go back and make a good faith effort to do the job.
What is a good faith effort? Give me an example. They just try, even if it's for the day and they can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I tell them, don't go in half an hour say, I can't do it.
Right.
Make a good faith effort, and then if you're having pain from the work injury, not like you have a headache, but from the work injury, if you're having symptoms, complain, make it known. Because if you get to a hearing and you have to testify, then you'll be able to testify that you complained.
Yeah.
And then, try it.
Fitbit lady who walks 6,000 steps.
Yeah. And oftentimes they go back and they'll have light duty for them, but it's just phony baloney. It's only they're not going to keep that light duty open. So what I tell my people, if you have pain from the work injury, keep your claim information in your glove box in your car. Go straight to an emergency room or an urgent care. Don't go home. Don't go to a friend's. Go immediately and seek medical attention. Tell that ER or urgent care or your treating doctor, if you can get in with them, that you return to work and they're asking you to do too much or you just can't do it because of the pain.
Right.
Ask them to take you back out of work. And then I can have something to work with.
Sure. And when you're dealing with pre-existing injuries, okay, something, and they know it. I'm an iron worker, for crying out loud, and I know it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody got injured 10 years ago at a basketball game or whatever. They've been working for 10 years. They got their surgery years ago.
Right.
Or whatever the situation is. And they re-injure the same knee totally, legitimately in work. How many times people walk into, your office and they say, well, they said it's a pre-existing injury. I have to go to work. They know that that's not. They know that they're lying. But talk about that, because it's a strategy that's used often, and I'm assuming it's because they want to see if that obviously the worker buys it.
Right. Well, that brings us to a point of aggravation versus recurrence.
Sure.
So an aggravation in workers' comp world means a new injury. And if you did have a pre-existing injury years ago and you're back to work, you're working full-time, no restrictions, and I always ask that in my testimony, where you're working full-time, no restrictions, and then boom, they have a traumatic injury, it's a new injury, and if your doctor is able to testify that they had an aggravation of that pre-existing injury, then you have a good shot at getting your petition granted.
Shouldn't there be some kind of malpractice or something like that when they know that that's not
it? Joe, it's business. It all comes down to money. The insurance companies, they want their premiums, but they don't want to pay on the claims all the time. So just the way it is.
I know. It just drives me absolutely crazy. Thank God there are attorneys out there like yourself that are able to represent people and at least get them through these difficult times. How often are you as much a personal counselor as a legal counselor? Because, you're dealing with individuals whose lives are...
Every case.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned 9 months. That must be a tough conversation when there's a denial or a dispute.
Yeah.
And somebody who just can't work. I mean, they're in trouble.
Right.
And when...
I mean, sometimes they have, through their company, the option of short-term and long-term disability benefits, but a lot of people don't have that option. And then they ask me, can I file for unemployment? Well, no, because you want a workers' comp judge to believe that you had a disabling work injury, and if you try to get unemployment, you're saying to the state of Pennsylvania,
right,
or the Commonwealth,
right, you can work.
I'm able to work. So the two are diametrically opposed.
It's incredible, really. They put individuals in a very difficult. One of the things people don't, they try to see. So some people try to navigate it themselves, obviously, and they've never heard of a temporary, notice of time. Yeah, would you talk about that? A temporary notice.
Oh, okay. But I did want to talk about one other thing before
Please.
We do
oh,
go
yeah, go
off.
Ahead. Sure.
Okay. One place that a lot of clients find me on the internet is something called AVVO, A-V-V-O.
Right.
And it's really helpful for people to find attorneys because they can see how the attorneys are rated.
Yeah.
They can see all the attorneys' reviews.
And is that AVVO.com?
Yes.
Okay.
A-V-V as in Victor O. .com.
Okay.
And they're owned by Martindale Nolo, which is another big company that helps attorneys.
Joe and I are now going on AVVO to look up all the attorneys.
Although I'm aware. By the way, I'm aware of it, though. I know of AVVO.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud to say that I, at this point, have 102 5-star reviews.
Awesome.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Thanks.
Well, that's
pretty great.
Dan, how much time do we have? We have 2 minutes left. Let's do this.
Paula, tell us how we get in touch with you.
Yes.
Oh, my website is www.robinsonlwyr.com. And my phone number is 215-530-7166.
And you obviously answer.
I do.
Because you are an amazing one-man law firm band.
And what I love about that is
you
get to talk to the owner. You get to talk to the owner of the firm.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, the communications is that's got to be the biggest part of what you do.
Yes.
And the offices, again, remind our listeners.
Oh, my main office is in Center Valley, which is up past Quakertown before you get to Allentown, Williamsport, Mansfield, and Doylestown.
All right. Robin, your contact information?
Oh, you mean you're not taking my calls this week?
What are you talking about? Take your, when Robin calls, I can tell you this right now. One ring maximum.
Oh, God. 215-563-1315.
Well, listen, Paula Robinson's, this
it's
comes
a
to
pleasure.
Conclusion. The fastest hour in radio.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
Let's do it again. Absolutely. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show, sponsored by Robin Lewis and Healthmark Enterprises. We want to thank our guest and Robin's guest and good friend and outstanding attorney, Paula Robinson of the Robinson Law Firm here in Pennsylvania. I want to thank Dan for making it happen in the booth. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.